Sylvia and me.
Hi, I'm Sylvia Beckerman. Join me today as I talk to an extraordinary woman who is changing the world by making a difference in her life and the lives of those around her.
I'm Erin Barnes, and I'm one of the co-founders of IOB, and welcome to Sylvia and Me.
Erin, thank you so much for joining me today. IOBY, in our backyards. And I read that you chose that as opposed to not in my backyard.
That's right.
What does it really stand for?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I think all of us are sort of torn between different aspects of our lives, right? We all want to spend more time with family and with friends, and we also have to go to work every day. And we're also tired, and we want to do like self-soothing activities at the end of our days. And so I think like oftentimes we're in a position where all of our time is a trade-off between things that we care about. And oftentimes getting involved in our communities is a low priority. And one of the things that I noticed is in order to sort of like get people activated, it usually is because something that we really care about is at threat. And so oftentimes when you see people stepping into public spaces in their communities, it's because something that they really care about is being threatened. And so you have this sort of attitude of NIMBYism or not in my backyard, where residents sort of are on the defensive trying to protect something. And I think the attitude that IOB brings is we also know that every single day when we're walking to work or to church or driving around picking up our kids from soccer practice or whatever it is, we also are swimming with ideas of positive change for our communities. Like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if this playground had something else? Or wouldn't it be better if we could walk to a grocery store? Or wouldn't it be cool if there was like some beautiful art that makes like this part of the neighborhood stand out? And I think all of us have these like really beautiful, positive visions for our communities. But because of these trade-offs of our time, of our limited time, we often don't find a space for that. And to tell the truth, there's not often a lot of places to go. If you wake up one day and you're like, oh, I just really wish that I could get a farmer's market in my community, it's not always super clear how to get that started. You might go to your municipality. You might ask somebody in your neighborhood who you trust, who seems like well-connected and knows stuff, or maybe you go to like a local grant maker or something like that. But there's not a lot of pathways to get started on these like positive ideas for positive change to work on improving our neighborhoods. And so IOB is a place where we can support residents who are swimming in these dreams of great ideas to help them get started and work with them all the way through the process step by step.
So you're a nonprofit crowdfunding platform for local resident-led positive change.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, you and IOBY, you were selected out of 20,000 people from 191 countries for the inaugural fellow from the Obama Foundation Fellowships. That's pretty impressive. So in going back to the crowdfunding and some of the positive outcomes that you've had, can you tell us, because I'm just looking at the numbers, and you've had like 662 projects with a focus on placemaking, 109 on make streets safe for pedestrians and cyclists, and so on. I'd love to hear what your first project was, and how did that get you started knowing that this was something that there was a demand for?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think it's really interesting when my co-founders and I were at the Yale School of Forestry between 2005 and 2007. During that period of time, there's another nonprofit crowdfunding platform called Kiva that was really popular. It was new back then. And they were growing this momentum. And basically the idea behind Kiva is that you could make an investment in an entrepreneur in another country, typically in a developing country. And people just like love this idea. They were very excited about it. People were making these loans and then they'd get their loan back paid with interest and then they could make another loan. And it was really like it was really interesting to watch how excited people were about being lenders this way. But the thing that always sort of got, you know, sort of under, you know, under our skin about it is we were wondering like why people were so excited about giving to people in places where they had never been and people that they had never met, and like what that idea is about helping somebody. And so my co-founders and I were wondering aloud, what if the same type of model could work in people's own backyards, which is like where the name came from. And when we started off, we decided to start in our own backyards. And so we started really locally. We started as a New York City pilot only. And so IOB was only available at that time just in the five boroughs. Today, anyone in the United States and territories can use IOB. But at the time, it was just New York City and the first project that was ever funded. So when my co-founders and I got started, we started IOB just as a New York City pilot. Today, anyone in the United States and territories can use IOB. But at the time, it was just for the five boroughs of New York. The very first project that was funded was led by a 14-year-old Eagle Scout named Eddie Maddalena. And he heard me on NPR talking about that IOB was launching in a couple weeks. His aunt heard me on the radio and told him, oh, you know, you're doing that Eagle Scout project in Bay Ridge. You need to raise money for this environmental awareness fair. It was meant to be for the neighborhood to learn more about sustainability options in their community and to learn more about the local parks. And so Eddie was 14 at the time, and he launched the very first IOB campaign to fund, I think, like just a couple $100s. It was basically just money to buy pizza for the volunteers and to make sure that like all the volunteers had matching t-shirts and to find out like how many Eagle Scouts could volunteer to support the nonprofits at the fair. And so I think what we learned is that a lot of people are doing hyper-local block by block projects, but it's really, really hard to find right-sized, timely funding for them. So we designed our platform basically to support those people who are doing that on your block, in your neighborhood, in your community work, and might just need $500, $5,000, $50,000 to get their project started.
That has to be so fulfilling to have that as your first project.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at the numbers, and the average donation size is small.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a question that you're looking for huge amounts of money, but it sounds like what you're doing is really uplifting some of these communities and enabling them to put into effect some things that they themselves would make them feel good about their community that they've wanted for some time, but had no idea how to go about making that happen. What are some of the tougher projects that you've worked on that you somehow were able to make happen?
Yeah, sure. I'd love to talk about this. I mean, I think like one of my favorite projects is actually from Memphis, Tennessee. And it's led by two women named Eli Cloud and Nikki Ritchie. And they had been doing work with their church. And they found out that they heard a story from somebody at their church that there was a homeless woman who had fallen asleep outside of a local business and woke up to a police officer. And she basically had her period and had no tampons or pads with her and opted basically to spend the night in jail because she knew that she could get a shower and get cleaned up there and she didn't have any other options. And so Eli and Nikki just felt like this was just so undignified for people in need to also just have like basic hygiene. They felt like this was a really important and critical issue and something that could just be solved really simply. And so Eli and Nikki started a project on IOB called Sister Supply, and they just provide tampons and pads and underwear to women and girls in need so that people have the hygiene that they have to not be embarrassed. A lot of like homeless shelters don't provide basic menstrual hygiene. And I think a couple of times when I've talked to Eli and Nikki about this project is, for them. Memphis is a little bit still like a southern city where women and men don't talk about menstruation publicly very much. And so for them to talk about this campaign, they really tried to like embrace the silliness of how awkward people felt about talking about it. So Eli and Nikki would dress in all pink with like pink wigs and like wear white pants. And whenever they would talk to any men about the campaign, they would go on and on talking about menstruation. And they'd say, you know, if you don't want me to talk about this anymore, you can always make a donation. We call it hush money. You give us money and we'll hush up. And they're really successful in this because, I mean, it's really basic. Everybody deserves to have the dignity of having basic health and hygiene. And they were able to raise a few thousand dollars for the first phase of this campaign. They've since expanded. They're talking to other people in other cities about having similar types of campaigns in their cities. And over time, they've given away like literally tons of tampons and pads to women in need. And it's really successful. They always make a big deal out of Menstrual Hygiene Day on May 28th. I mean, it's fantastic. And so it's like this really, really simple idea that could be replicated anywhere. So I think like that's like one of the great stories. But I was also thinking about some of the topics that you and I were discussing before about how there's these like really, really big life moments that can be really painful that change your whole perspective on like what's important in life. And so I was thinking about another Memphis project. We have projects all over the U.S., but IOB operates with community organizers on the ground in several cities across the U.S., in Memphis, Detroit, Cleveland, and Pittsburgh. So we have a lot of really intimate stories from Memphis. And one of the other ones that I think really sticks out for me is the story of Lori Phillips. Her son, Chris, was actually killed by a car in a hit and run. And obviously, like, any death in a family is going to be devastating to anybody. And then one of the things that I've always felt like having the experience of working at IOB for the last 11 years is it's so inspiring how people can transform an unimaginably devastating life experience into something really beautiful. And this is not uncommon in Memphis. It's like ranked number 9th most dangerous for pedestrian deaths among the 104 largest metro areas in the U.S. And so there's a lot of pedestrian deaths in Memphis. And so Lori created this memorial crosswalk that's super beautiful. And like, you know, a regular crosswalk just has stripes on it, which is there just to make it more visible so cars remember to slow down. This one has these like beautiful stencils of birds flying that's like super animated. So actually the whole street has become like an artscape. I think IOB supported her in this project so that she was able to raise the $5,185 that she needed for like the stencils and the paint and the permit and that sort of thing. But the truth is like that vision and that sort of dedication, I mean, that was all Lori, right? And I think so IOB's role is really just to support the like the beautiful intentions and the hard work and the visions of people who live in all of our neighborhoods.
And who would not, again, have the opportunity, would not really know where to go. And IOBY was able to see the vision, to realize that it's something that's not a frivolous project. How wonderful is that? I know when we talked before, you mentioned that 80% of the people who lead are women or girls. So why do you think that is?
I mean, I guess I might just be a little biased in saying this, but I think women play a really, really important community and family caretaking role. And maybe for different reasons about ways that women are employed, the ways that they provide care to different relatives, have more access and ability to be able to sort of tap into that emotional intelligence to be able to lead around projects like this. I'm not really sure, but I don't think that it's super surprising that women and girls are the people who step up to lead. We see this over and over again. I could rattle off a million stories about these beautiful projects that women have led.
Okay, so we won't rattle off a million of them, but how about what was one of the toughest ones that you were able to make happen?
One of the toughest ones. Well, I think a project that was really, really big I think this is true in a lot of places, right? People have like a huge idea for change. And it's really important to figure out the way to build incremental growth and to start small. And so one of our strategists at IUB, we have like a whole team of people who are there to provide one-on-one coaching to everyone for their projects. And one of our strategists named Christina worked with an IUB leader on a project called the Firefly Trail. And basically, this was a huge vision to transform an old railroad line that's 39 miles long across Georgia into a multi-use trail for bikers and pedestrians. And it had been dormant since 1984. It's a long time to have a dormant rail line, and 39 miles is really long. And it's certainly going through a lot of backyards, right? And so there's a small organization dedicated to turning this into a trail. And so the leader that we worked with is named Yvette Bledsoe. The group had been advocating for this for a really long time. And ultimately, they came to IOB because they wanted to build 1 mile of it as a model, sort of to show like, okay, so we want to build this 39-mile long trail. Let's just show you what 1 mile looks like, and then people will get the idea. One of my friends calls this futuritizing. You advertise the future you want to see, right? And so they just wanted to do a model mile of the trail. So they ended up starting an IOB campaign for $60,000. And, you know, there's a bunch of different ways to get $60,000. They could have gotten a grant, whatever, but they wanted the money quickly and they needed it to be unrestricted. And so crowdfunding was a really good fit for them. They could raise exactly how much they needed and they weren't going to have to jump through any hurdles to do it. But, you know, the organization had never done a fundraising campaign like this. So our staff person, Christina, worked with them to train them on how to have a successful crowdfunding campaign. And they did a great job. They got like a lot of public support. It was in the local news. It was all over Facebook. And then they really built up the public will for it. And so tons of people were engaged in this as donors. And it was really fantastic. And so they hit their fundraising goal. I think they even exceeded their fundraising goal. But what was crazy is that shortly after, like just weeks after they reached their goal, there is a local municipal vote on allocating taxes from their taxes called TSBLOFT. And they ended up actually, because of all of the like public will that they had built up during this campaign, the county commission voted to approve $16 million to support the campaign after they raised $60,000 on IOB, right? So they were able to raise the first 13 miles of the 39-mile trail. And so I think like this, I think, speaks to the idea of actually President Obama said this a couple weeks ago at the summit. A lot of us want to be able to change the world, but you can't figure out how to change the world until you can change your country, and you can't change your country until you can figure out how to change your city, and you can't figure out how to change your city until you can change your block. And projects like Firefly Trail, I think, is the right move. They started off and they're just like, let's just do 1 mile and show people what we want. And their vision was super beautiful and they were able to achieve it. And so others were able to say like, yeah, all right, we're going to put in the $16 million for the next 13 miles. And I'm sure they're still building support for it.
That's fantastic because it's so true. People who are walking around saying that I can't do anything, I'm not big enough, I'm not a politician, I'm not this, I'm not that, they don't understand that starting small is great because what's around you is really what is involved in your life on a daily basis. And starting off, that's why I am very impressed by what you've done and the projects that you've done. I mean, this one that you just spoke about, they started something not knowing that it could actually do anything, but they wanted to do something on their block in their community. And look what happened. It's stories like that. It's people not giving up and wanting to and realizing that there's no such thing as a small little project. Because the breadth of something really touches more people than you sometimes even imagine. So I understand that you have a new partnership with the state of Connecticut.
So yeah, IOB has a brand new partnership that I'm just thrilled about. It's funded by the Emily Hall Tremaine Foundation and the Connecticut Green Bank. And it's a partnership between IOB and Sustainable Connecticut. Sustainable Connecticut is a voluntary certification program, so municipalities can become sustainability certified by doing these voluntary actions under 10 categories. And I think there's like 57 municipalities in Connecticut are already certified. And the partnership that we have is so interesting right now. So basically, we're supporting any resident-led project anywhere in the state of Connecticut that works towards these voluntary sustainability goals in any way that they see fit. And the goal of it is to have residents more involved in municipal actions around sustainability, because we all know that, you know, making change involves policies, but it also involves changing behaviors. And so the more that residents are involved, I think that means that there's going to be more behavior change, but there's also going to be even better policies in place because of resident involvement and inclusion of resident voices. The partnership with IOB is that when residents crowdfund these projects that meet these criteria in Connecticut, every single dollar is matched dollar for dollar. And so it's really, really cool. So there's already a campaign to replace street trees that were lost in storms. There's after-school culinary programs. There's remediation gardens. There's food waste recovery programs, outdoor classrooms in public schools, like all sorts of sustainability projects that are being matched all the way across the state of Connecticut. So I think it's just fantastic. And the Sustainable Connecticut is a fantastic partner.
That is an accomplishment. Have you done anything like this in other states?
This is the first of its kind for us. So this model of voluntary sustainability projects that are municipal led has been done before. I'm really familiar with Sustainable New Jersey. We've worked with some of the municipalities in New Jersey on this before. And I know that it's active in a few other states, I think Maryland as well. And I think this is just a really cool way of having more residents engaged. IOB has had other partnerships that activate campaigns through match dollars. And we love doing this because it makes it, I don't know how many of your listeners have ever done any fundraising before, but it can be pretty intimidating to ask somebody for money. And so when you're starting a community project for the first time, it helps to have some match funds on the table to give yourself a little like extra confidence on making that ask. And it incentivizes donors. I think the Gates Foundation did some research on online donations. And whenever there are matches available, online donations are about 30% bigger than they would normally be. So it's an awesome way to really get like that funding right to the front lines of groups across the state doing this cool work to meet these voluntary sustainability guidelines.
It most definitely is. And yes, you're right. When you're fundraising, if you can have a match, that definitely opens up to more people donating. That sounds like one heck of a project. How long have you been doing this in Connecticut?
Well, it just launched, actually. We just got started in September, and it's fantastic. The folks at Sustainable Connecticut are just fantastic, and we've got a full-time organizer who's out pounding the pavement, meeting with grassroots organizations, talking about the opportunity, making sure that people understand like what sorts of projects we're looking for, and it's just great. So, and there's already, I think, like at least a dozen projects online that folks can check out and give to. And it's really easy to start a project of your own if you're in Connecticut too.
As I said, I'll repeat myself. That's fantastic. And it's so empowering for people to know that they can do this, that there's an organization like yours that will help people make something that they thought could never happen and do it while they're being part of the community and making where they are better. So you are an inaugural Obama Fellow 2018. What has your experience been so far?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's really been fantastic. I mean, obviously, the opportunity to meet President and Mrs. Obama is a huge deal. They are just incredibly smart, thoughtful, kind people who have given us a lot of their time and shared a lot of their wisdom with all of us. I think I have an enormous amount of respect for them as leaders, and I think all of us in the fellowship are on this journey of figuring out how to become the types of leaders we want to be. And as role models, I mean, I couldn't ask for anything better. And it's been a really interesting learning experience to see the type of movement that I think is growing here. There's something that President Obama has written about and talked about publicly a lot that goes like something like this, that there's more stars in the sky than there are grains of sand on Earth. The universe is very, very big and timelines are very, very long, and we are relatively very small. And I think that it's humbling to remind myself of how big the world is and how big and long the work of working for justice in all of our communities is. And to know that I'm not going to be the person who changes the whole world. None of us are, but that each of us has like a very critical role in it. So we're all a piece of it, but we can't do it all. And so I think for me, the biggest part of it is to understand that I have a responsibility to show up and do what I can, but I can also depend on other people to be a part of this as well. And I think they've set like a really beautiful example for us on like what it means to be in community where everyone is welcome and everyone is treated with kindness. And President and Mrs. Obama don't put on airs with us. They treat us like real people and they treat us with respect. And that experience really means something.
I would think so. Erin, I applaud you and your team, everyone in ILBY, for doing the work that you're doing. I'm looking forward to taking a look and seeing what other projects you're doing in Connecticut and other places. And for anyone who is interested in learning more and looking at the projects or might be interested in starting a project, I believe your website is iobY.org.
That's correct. Yeah.
Well, Erin, I look forward to following you and seeing what you're doing. I thank you so much for joining me today, and thank you.
No, thank you. It's been a huge pleasure. It's wonderful talking with you. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Thank you for joining me today. On our next podcast, I'll be talking with another extraordinary woman. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, iHeartRadio, and of course, our website, lifeofprey.com. Listen, subscribe for free, and take us with you wherever you are. This has been a Life of Prey production.